the latest agriculture news from across the state and the nation, here's Farm City Newsday by AgNet West. Here's your host, Danielle Leal.
Good Friday morning, and thanks for joining us here today at Farm City News Day. Well, it's the beginning of a new month, and you know what that means. It's time to mark your calendars for events that you might need to attend. First up, we have the Fresno Madera CAPCA Seminar that's held in Fresno on September 12th. September 14th, we have the Best Practices in Ag Water Management meeting in Salinas. And on the 19th, we have the annual Alfalfa and Forage Field Day that's taking place in Parlier. If you're a dairy farmer, you might want to attend the Feeding Beats on California Dairy Farms meeting, which is also held in Parlier on the 19th. Rounding out the month of September, we have the Pesticide Safety Instructor Training Workshop on the 24th in Woodland, and on the 25th, there's a Ranching for Profit Workshop in Moss Landing. To get information on these events and more, head to our website at www.agnetwest.com and sign up for our e-newsletter. Moving on to what's happening in today's show, Brian German is talking with us about the Organic Dairy Survey, which producers are encouraged to participate in. You'll hear about how California strawberries have helped open up the first ever Costco in China. Taylor Hillman has details on the CDFA Sustainable Pest Management Grants that are up for grabs. And I'm starting off the show today with news on trade with Japan. So let's jump right in. The trade deal between Japan and the U.S. is said to be beneficial for American agriculture, with the potential for dropped tariffs. When it comes to the details of the trade deal with Japan, Tracy Chow, Federal Government Affairs Specialist with Western Growers, said the deal is said to be looked at as an early harvest.
In terms of the scope of the deal, based out of conversations that we've had with the administration, we are expecting it to be sort of a short-term deal. Others have referred to it as an early harvest deal. That will be fairly narrow. Tackling the tariff reductions is probably the biggest priority for ag as a whole. And we also anticipate the deal will be constructed in a way that doesn't require approval from Congress. Again, we expect it to be somewhat narrow. And frankly, there is a strong desire from the administration to deliver on some trade opportunities for the ag industry, just given all of the other turmoil that's going on in the international space.
Stay tuned as we'll hear more from Tracy and the deal with Japan later in the show. But for now, here is Taylor Hillman with more agriculture news.
Costco opens its first warehouse in China, and California strawberries were there for the celebration. Shanghai is now home to the first Costco warehouse in China, and it was a wild scene at the opening last week. California was well represented at the event, as strawberries, courtesy of California Giant Berries, were in the produce section. COO Joe Barcy said that they were a bit surprised about the situation.
Yeah, it actually surprised me that they weren't already there. I just assumed that Costco had approached us on, you know, getting some strawberries for one of their new centers or warehouse stores or warehouse, whatever you want to call them, to open up. And but come to find out, it was actually their first one in mainland China. So it was exciting. They approached four different berry suppliers to source fruit from, and fortunately for Cal Giant, we had all of our preparation in order to be able to accomplish that. So out of the four suppliers they chose, we were the only supplier that was able to execute getting fruit through all the different phytosanitary and requirements over there.
Stay with AgNet West and this radio station to hear how California Giant Berries was in the right position to make this happen. Reporting for AgNet West, I'm Taylor Hillman.
Western United Dairies is looking for input from the industry and is encouraging producers to take part in a survey that's looking at organic production. Low prices have been an issue for organic producers for quite some time, with reports circulating over the past year about hundredweight prices in the low $20 range or even at conventional price levels. While the federal milk marketing order has proven beneficial for some dairy farmers, the order has not brought any relief to organic dairies who are compensated outside of the system with individual contracts. The low prices may be stemming from an oversupply, however, there's not enough data to know the cause definitively. That lack of data is one of the reasons for the Organic Production Survey to confirm the level at which prices are depressed and also identify driving factors for why prices are so low. Western United Dairies also wants to hear what producers believe would be a helpful course of action to potentially improve the organic pay price situation. Registration is open for the annual Fertilizer Research Conference from CDFA's Fertilizer Research and Education Program and the Western Plant Health Association. The 27th annual conference is going to be hosted at the DoubleTree Hilton Hotel in Fresno on October 28th through the 30th. The event provides an opportunity for industry professionals and academic researchers to come together to learn about and share the latest research and innovative management practices for fertilizing materials. A farm tour will kick off the conference on October 28th, where attendees will visit a diversified vegetable farm as well as a table grape vineyard. Presentations and breakout sessions will begin on October 29th, featuring information on nitrogen and irrigation management as well as organic amendments. The day will conclude with a poster session showcasing ongoing research projects across California. The final day of the conference will feature presentations on soil and salinity management, along with irrigation design and maintenance. I'm Brian German for AgNet West Radio Network.
And in a report provided by the National Association of Farm Broadcasters, negotiators from United States and China will meet face-to-face next month. Chinese officials told reporters on Thursday that the agreement was reached in a phone conversation this week. China's vice premier visited over the phone on Thursday morning with U.S. Treasury Secretary Steven Mnuchin and U.S. Trade Representative Robert Lighthizer. Following the call, China announced negotiators plan to travel to Washington next month for high-level talks and will continue consultations through September ahead of the meeting in October. The announcement from China comes as President Trump told reporters in the Oval Office this week that China wants to reach a deal with the United States. The U.S. Trade Representative's office has yet to confirm the planned October meeting, but did say discussions will take place in the coming weeks. The tit-for-tat trade war with China has dropped U.S. ag exports to the country from more than $20 billion in 2017 to $9 billion last year. A breakthrough in negotiations would be welcome news for agriculture. This is Farm City News Day by AgMet West. We'll have more of the day's agriculture news in just a moment. And remember, you can always get the latest agriculture news from across the state and the nation at our website at www.agmetwest.com. We'll be right back. Welcome back to AgMet West Farm City News Day. We've got more agriculture news right now.
The success of Appeal Sciences in prolonging the shelf life of fresh produce is helping the company expand at a fairly rapid pace. Founded back in 2012 in Santa Barbara, the company's plant-based coating material was first used on avocados, which are now in 500 stores including Costco, Kroger, and Harps. Named one of Fast Company's 50 most innovative companies, Appeal has now expanded its offerings to apples, asparagus, and citrus fruits such as lemons, limes, and mandarins. The company is also opening 3 satellite facilities in the Netherlands, Peru, and Mexico, and will be evaluating potential opportunities in South and Central America. Aimed at addressing global food waste, Appeal's plant-based coating material creates an extra peel of sorts that slows the rate of water loss and oxidation. The technology has proven to be effective in reducing the rate of spoilage for dozens of USDA organic certified and conventional produce categories. I'm Brian German for AgNet West Radio Network.
Well, in today's livestock news, back on August 25th, it was announced that the U.S. and Japan had agreed in principle on a trade deal that will greatly improve access for U.S. red meat in Japan, the largest value destination for U.S. pork and beef exports. Well, this week, the U.S. Meat Export Federation has been leading a delegation of pork, beef, corn, and soybean producers and other U.S. ag industry leaders in Japan. And during a media conference call Thursday morning, USMEA President and CEO Dan Holstrom explained who was involved with the trip and that key customers in Japan are looking forward to gaining better access to U.S. red meat products.
The Heartland team this year, we have 31 producer members that are part of the team, actually covering 13 different states, a combination of beef producers, pork producers, corn and soybean producers, as well as Farm Bureau, and we have a couple of State Department of Agriculture that are on the team as well. The purpose of this trip this week was to really give them an overview and an introduction to the market in Japan, both beef and pork, and kind of see some of the funding dollars at work, so to speak. We actually just came from a seminar and a tasting, a dinner with tasting of U.S. beef and pork products. We had about 325 people at this seminar, which was really cross-section of the entire trade in Japan, including importers, distributors, retailers, and food service operators, and some other sectors as well. So we've had a full week already, a couple more days to go, but it's been good so far in that regard. I would also make a quick comment about the market itself. As you all know, there was an announcement a week and a half ago from President Trump and Abe-san, Prime Minister of Japan, of an agreement in principle in regards to a Japan ag agreement. I have to tell you, there's a lot of enthusiasm with the trade, with the customers in Japan about that. As you all know, we're operating at a disadvantage at the moment, with 12% duty disadvantage for the U.S. versus some of our key competitors like Australia, Canada, and Mexico. And also, we're at a disadvantage on the pork side, seasoned ground pork, about 7% duty disadvantage, as well as processed meats as well at a disadvantage. So we're happy to say that the trade here in Japan, very enthusiastic about the prospect of getting on a level playing field sooner rather than later. So I would say the timing of our trip in that regard was perfect.
Again, that was USMEF President and CEO Dan Hallstrom. Now, the U.S. ag industry leaders are in Japan through Saturday. To learn more, you can go to the USMEF website. That's USMEF.org. I'm Randall Wiseman for AgNet West.
Grants are available for two sustainable pest management programs. The California Department of Food and Agriculture is accepting grant applications for its Biologically Integrated Farming Systems Program. CDFA has $2 million available for the program. That's goal is to fund on-farm demonstrations and evaluations of innovative biologically based farming systems that employ integrated pest management strategies. CDFA is also accepting applications for their Proactive IPM Solutions program, which aims to anticipate exotic pests likely to arrive in California and to identify and test IPM strategies which can be quickly implemented if the pests are detected. CDFA says the techniques resulting from this proactive approach will allow for rapid deployment of management plans. Go to CDFA's website for more information. Reporting for AgNet West, I'm Taylor Hillman.
This is Farm City News Day by AgNet West. We'll be right back. Welcome back to AgNet West Farm City News Day. We've got more agriculture news right now.
In the 21st century, it's no secret that some foods are healthier for people than others.
The problem is that everybody knows that you need to have more fibers. But the surveys of surveys show that consumers are not really eating right. They know what's good for them, but they never actually follow through it.
That was Agricultural Research Service scientist Sean Liu, who works at the National Center for Agricultural Utilization Research in Peoria, Illinois.
And we know eating right will prolong your life and reduce the chance to get diseases.
So if people already know what's good for them, why do they still not choose healthier foods packed with fiber?
We figured out a lot of food with a lot of added fibers do not taste as good as the original ones.
Which is why ARS researchers have been looking at using an old ingredient to solve new food problems, using ancient grains.
We just discovered those ancient grains because that they provide something that we realize is important to us.
Ancient grains include things like amaranth and chia.
They are really a lot of good stuff. You have a lot of minerals, vitamins, proteins, and amino acids, and even the fat is pretty good.
So how do researchers take advantage of the benefits of ancient grains? By developing dietary fiber food product blends like Otrim, Nutrim, and Z-Trim.
We use that to enhance the fortify the food. So when consumers consume those food, they are taking a lot of the soluble fibers, which can help you lower your cholesterol, improve your heart health.
In other words,
our job is now is to try to incorporate the ancient grain into some kind of ready-to-use ingredients, easily used by the consumers directly or by the manufacturers.
And how has that been working out?
We have experienced a number of things which have combined those ancient grains with the other grains to produce the common foods like cookies, bread.
Another product is bread coatings used for fried foods.
And we also developed the ice cream with soluble fibers. And we also use soluble fiber to incorporate it into cheese.
Another benefit of ancient grains is something that has emerged as a health issue for many, whether or not a grain is gluten-free.
All ancient grains are gluten-free, most of them.
Yes, that's right. He says most ancient grains are gluten-free, which opens up another huge market of people who are gluten intolerant.
We take the best part of those commodity products and incorporate into the food matrices. So we make that food more healthy, more palatable, and the consumer won't notice the difference.
In other words, USDA scientists are working behind the scenes to figure out how to make the same foods people love to eat better for them. This is Stephanie Ho for the U.S. Department of Agriculture in Washington, D.C.
Planning the perfect tea garden. That's coming up on This Land of Ours. If you're a big tea drinker, or if you're looking for a way to supplement your medicine cabinet on the cheap, it may be time to consider growing an herbal tea garden. Growing your own herbal and flower tea lets you control what goes into your tea, and you get a lot of product for not a lot of cost. Also in your tea garden, you can plant flowers that aren't actually herbs, but make wonderful additions to your tea choices. These flowers also add color to tea gardens, and if you have bees, they will add a beautiful flavor to your honey. There are several plants essential to your tea garden, including lavender, sage, mint, chamomile, thyme, borage, and lemon verbena. Other plants for tea gardens should include ginger, jasmine, stevia, St. John's wort, echinacea, and lemon balm. One of the keys to success with an herbal tea garden is to group plants that have similar preferences. I'm Kathy Isom for AgNet West.
Good day, everybody. Albert J. Hernandez, the Untamed Chef for AgNet West. Welcome to the California Kitchen, where you can learn how to cook from an award-winning chef in under 3 minutes or less. I'm your host with the most. Let's get untamed. My recipe today is a beautiful Cuban-style whole hog, carnitas, pork meat, whatever you want to call it. However, there is a really unique way for doing this, and we're going to be using what's called a caja china, which is also translated as a china box. What the china box allows us to do is to be able to get a beautiful, succulent, and I mean really, really amazing product of this whole hog. And I'm using a 100-pound whole hog. Now, I'm doing this because I know that during fall, people like to do a lot of just really fun family style events. So if you like this recipe and want to use it, please definitely do so. So the first thing we're going to do is we're going to get our whole hog. This is a 100-pound hog, and we're going to turn it around, opening up into the rib cage. What I'm going to do is add in a mojo. So what the mojo is a blend of cilantro, pineapple juice, orange juice, garlic, and lime. And the blend will be obviously on the recipe, but we're going to take that mojo sauce. We're going to rub it all inside of the rib cage, and we're going to use an injector. And we're going to take the juice part of this and inject it into the legs, the shoulders, everything of the pig that has a lot of fatty, that has the skin over the top, but has that real beautiful fat around that meat, because that's going to absorb all of that flavor. So when we start the caja china box, the very first thing I'm going to do is start with 16 pounds of charcoal over the top. Every hour after that, for 4 hours, I'm going to add in 8 pounds. After we have put all of the charcoal on, I'm going to take the pig, we're going to open it up very carefully because it's very hot in there. We're going to flip the pig, and then we're going to put a beautiful crust, and we're going to really enhance that texture on the part of the skin. This is where you make cracklings or chicharrones. Now, this is really, really important that you make sure you take all the ash off. You just want to have the coals. You want it to be really, really hot. If you want to add more coals to this, you can. And I'd say another 8 pounds of fresh, and let it sit for 35 to 40 minutes. I promise you, this is going to be the most amazing pig you've ever had, and your family's absolutely going to love it.
For this and many more of my recipes, go to my website, www.ajhtheuntamedchef.com. And as always, this is Albert J. Hernandez. You all know me as the Untamed Chef from AgNet West.
This is Farm City News Day by AgNet West. More agriculture news and farm features are coming up. Welcome back to AgNet West Farm City News Day. I'm Danielle Leo. Earlier in the show, we heard from Western Growers Tracy Chow talk about the recent trade deal with Japan. For today's interview segment, I talk with her more in depth on the topic.
Okay, Tracy Chow, Federal Government Affairs Specialist with Western Growers.
Awesome, Tracy. So today we're talking about trade, specifically with Japan. And a few days ago, President Trump and the Japanese Prime Minister Abe, I hope I'm pronouncing his name right, but the two of them shook hands on a principal deal. So can you give me any idea of what this deal with Japan potentially could look like?
Yeah, so at this point, nothing official has come out on paper from the U.S. Trade Representative's office. Same thing with no summaries at this point. The most information has come from the verbal comments that were made from President Trump, Ambassador Lighthizer, and Prime Minister Abe. But as they stated in their comments, it's expected to address agriculture as well as industrial tariffs and digital trade. And it was also stated that there may be some agricultural purchases of certain commodities by the private sector. Again, this all remains to be seen. From our educated guess is that we will see tariff levels reduced to zero, or at least just some amount of reduction for agricultural commodities. We remain hopeful that sanitary and phytosanitary standards can be addressed, so the way that Japan deals with pest and disease controls. In terms of the scope of the deal, based off of conversations that we've had with the administration, we are expecting it to be sort of a short-term deal, or others have referred to it as an early harvest deal, that will be fairly narrow. So obviously for ag, tackling the tariff reductions is probably the biggest priority for ag as a whole. And we also anticipate that the deal will be constructed in a way that doesn't require approval from Congress. Again, we expect it to be somewhat narrow. And frankly, just there is a strong desire from the administration to deliver on some trade opportunities for the ag industry, just given all of the other turmoil that's going on in the international space. Regarding a timeline, there's still obviously a lot in flux. There's a lot of text that needs to be written, but at least from the president's own comments, the target date for this is to potentially be signed at the next United Nations General Assembly meeting, which should be late next month in September. After that, there's been talk about trying to also do a second phase that will be larger and more comprehensive down the road, but again, that remains to be seen.
Wow, so lots of things happening. That seems like it would bring lots of relief to you know, folks who are within the ag industry, you know, nationwide. So it's something that seems like it's needed, correct?
Absolutely.
And so we heard about some of the things that it might do for, you know, folks across the board. You know, wheat growers have supported this deal, the National Cattlemen's Beef Association, and you guys over here at Western Growers have supported it. So what will this deal potentially mean for producers here in California?
So I think even just the announcement for a deal in principle represents notable progress towards achieving what we perceive will be new net market gain. Japan is a huge opportunity as one of the top ag product importers in the world. It's obviously a fairly small country. They need a lot of imports coming in, and they've continued to be the United States' fourth largest ag market. The consumer base there places a lot of emphasis on health and, you know, quality, safe product, which California, you know, if I'm speaking biasly, is the leader in. At the time, the market is extremely protected. It continues to be in one of the most protected markets, I'd say, in the world. And it's been difficult to penetrate on several different fronts, whether we're looking at tariff or non-tariff barriers. So if we were to get the deal that we are thinking of, again, to where we can get tariff reductions or other kinds of reforms that would have matched what we would have achieved under the Trans-Pacific Partnership, would also, I think, essentially just give us a level playing field for our growers. Japan has moved forward with other trade agreements, again, with the sort of revised TPP called the CPTPP, a lot of acronyms, and then also and also with their bilateral with the European Union. So right now, unfortunately, U.S. ag is losing ground in Japan, and so achieving that, even just the parity, you know, tariff equality, reform equality, that will be huge, and again, opening up what could be a very profitable market. And I think on the broader scope, you know, having a deal with Japan will be a big step towards restoring just trade certainty. It's no secret ag is undergoing a lot of pressures on several different fronts with China, with the new NAFTA agreement, USMCA, also with India and with the European Union. And so something with Japan would be absolutely welcome and frankly overdue. I mean, our farmers, we've got product here that's ready to go and it needs a home, and Japan has, we've long had our eye on Japan.
Yeah. Now, you spoke a lot about the advantages to it and how it's a bilateral agreement between Japan and other countries. Are there any disadvantages to having a bilateral agreement?
So there's an ongoing academic argument, frankly, about, you know, the pros and cons of multilateral agreements versus bilaterals. I won't even attempt to try to opine on that. But I think in terms of, again, looking at the TPP versus this, is again, frankly, that it put us behind schedule, I would say, to where other countries were able to move forward and take advantage of Japan access quicker than we've been able to. So that's maybe obviously a very obvious sort of disadvantage about pulling out of the TPP and starting over from scratch. And again, the details are still unknown, so it's hard to compare at this point. From what Japan has publicly said, they do not want to go farther than what they have agreed to in other free trade agreements. So again, whether that means we get exactly what has been given under the CPTPP or what they've given to the EU remains to be seen versus whether they give us something extra. Again, we don't know at that point. But for a history lesson, I know Western growers, we were supportive of TPP back when it was still under consideration, frankly, for the access into Japan. That was, again, the biggest market access opportunity that we saw. It included the tariff reductions, and it included a lot of positive language towards Japan addressing its sanitary and phytosanitary issues. So I think that's our take at this point.
This is Farm City News Day by Ag Med West. More agriculture news and farm features are coming up. Welcome back to Ag Med West Farm City News Day. We've got more agriculture news right now. This time every year, people begin to look for the latest edition of the Old Farmer's Almanac, chocked full of information not only for agriculturists, but just about anyone. Mike Davis has the report.
Janice Stillman is the 13th editor of the venerable annual publication. Stillman points out that last year's 80% accurate long-range weather forecast was no fluke.
We use solar science, which is the study of the activity on the sun, in particular the sunspots. We use climatology, which is the study of prevailing conditions over long periods of time. So basically that means we consider what happened on the sun in past years and decades and centuries, see what it's doing now and see what we can expect. And we use the study of the ocean temperatures, jet streams, and various other factors that folks hear on the 6 and 11 o'clock news say. But we also consider that we're hearing more and more about global warming these days, and we do work that into our forecast. And that's one of the reasons why we're predicting above normal temperatures across much of the country.
In addition to the almanac's uncanny weather predicting, there are dozens of other uses.
Of course, the Old Farmer's Almanac is a calendar of the heavens because it forecasts all of the astronomical events throughout the year, from the moon phases to the meteor showers, planetary conjunctions to length of day. So important to people today, for example, as you see the days getting shorter and the sun rising later in the day. and also the star transit, twilight times, and so many more things. It's a calendar of events. As you say, planning is a big part of people's lives, and the Old Farmer's Almanac is all about time.
Stillman says people have come to expect the traditional look of the almanac, but with up-to-the-minute content.
But everything that you find between the covers is very modern and contemporary, from the recipes to the tips and the home remedies and metric conversions and mind manglers and contests and things.
Janice Stillman is the editor of the Old Farmer's Almanac, published continuously since 1792. It's available at newsstands and at almanac.com. I'm Mike Davis.
The complete agricultural trade numbers for July are in now, and on the negative side,
we've had our first negative trade balance for July since
1986, 33 years. And USDA trade economist Cameron Daugherty says that in the first 10 months of this fiscal year, we've recorded an ag trade deficit in three of those months. The deficit in July, however, very small.
We had exports at $10.8 billion, but we had imports at $10.9 billion.
As far as how we stand for the first 10 months of this fiscal year,
we have exports at $114 billion, down $8.1 billion from fiscal year 2018.
Soybean sales, despite a little bit of a surge in the last couple of months, are down 28% compared to this time a year ago. Cotton down 11, corn down 13, but wheat exports running ahead of a year ago at $5.2 billion, up 24%. In Washington, Gary Crawford for the U.S. Department of Agriculture.
And now for a recap of one of today's top stories.
Western United Dairies is looking for input from the industry and is encouraging producers to take part in a survey that's looking at organic production. Low prices have been an issue for organic producers for quite some time, with reports circulating over the past year about hundredweight prices in the low $20 range or even at conventional price levels. While the federal milk marketing order has proven beneficial for some dairy farmers, the order has not brought any relief to organic dairies who are compensated outside of the system with individual contracts. The low prices may be stemming from an oversupply, however, there's not enough data to know the cause definitively. That lack of data is one of the reasons for the Organic Production Survey to confirm the level at which prices are depressed and also identify driving factors for why prices are so low. Western United Dairies also wants to hear what producers believe would be a helpful course of action to potentially improve the organic pay price situation. I'm Brian German for AgNet West Radio Network.
To get more information on the topics you heard today, visit AgNet West online at agnetwest.com. You can follow AgNet West on Twitter and Facebook with @AgNetWest. Follow Brian German with @BrianAgNetWest, Danielle Leal with @DLealAgNetWest, and Taylor Hillman with @TheManOfTheHill. This has been Farm City News Day by AgNet West.